The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
Dave?
Yep.
Are you calling from the Seattle area too?
I'm calling. I live in Medina.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're like across the pond from where we're at.
Yeah. Where are you guys?
We're, if you know, we're Leschi. 90. Yeah. Leschi,
oh,
Mount
yeah,
Baker.
Yeah. Well, I could, you know, if I got on my roof, I could probably see you.
You could. Yeah. If you squinted
or
really hard.
Or walked down the driveway or something. Leschi.
Yeah. We're
so
right across the pond.
So are we supposed to call you, yeah, Mr. President?
Pardon?
Or can we call you Dave?
Can we call you Mr. President or Dave?
I would prefer that you just call me Dave.
Dave.
Yeah.
Okay. Just Dave. So I have just one question for you.
Oh, that's good. That's the kind of interview I like.
Okay.
One question.
Good. Are you going to the Weird Al concert?
I thought you were going to ask, is Bill a good neighbor?
No, I'm not going to ask if Bill
okay,
a good neighbor.
Okay.
Going to the Weird Al concert. Great song by Chris Ballew and his friend Dave Thiele. I'm not going to the Weird Al concert, but I hear Weird Al puts on a good show. And he and Chris, my bandmate, became pretty good friends over the course of him, you know, doing that lump thing.
Yeah.
And, we got to be pretty buddy-buddy, or they did, and he came and, I guess, you know, he came to a show we were playing in L.A. and personally asked us if we would do that with him.
Wow.
And then, you know, if we would mind if he did the song. And then, like 2 months later, we were back playing another gig in L.A., and he came and asked us if, yeah, he played it for us to get our reaction, which I guess he had never done before, ever, with any of his spoofs. Like, sort of sat in the room with the person that he'd satirized and played it for them.
Wow.
So we sat on the bus. He's a super nice guy. And actually, you know, apropos of talking about podcasting and new media models, he's a very interesting business person. It's, you know, he has his own record label, and he has this genius business model where, you know, all those songs where he rewrites the words, he takes a bunch of the publishing income from them for rewriting the lyrics. And then he makes these records. He's always made these records where half the songs are his satires and half of them are his own songs. And so he makes a whole bunch of money on publishing because people buy it for the hit.
Yep.
But they have to buy his songs too, and he gets paid for all those.
Wow. So
he's a very clever guy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But, well, not to say that you wouldn't be. You've completed an independent project, though, have you not?
An independent project, like for extra credit?
Yeah.
Like some kind of report?
You know, my degree is in English education, so...
Oh, I was an English teacher. I don't know if you knew that.
Really? No, yeah. I did not know that.
That was my first job out of undergraduate school. I was a high school English teacher for 5 years.
Oh, this is spooky. This is really spooky. Where did you get your degree?
At Brown University.
Okay. I was at a slightly less popular college in the Midwest.
What's that?
University of Northern Iowa.
University of Northern Iowa.
Yeah, just a little fart of a college in the Midwest.
What town is that in?
It would be Cedar Falls.
So does Highway 20 run through there?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've driven across the country. I mean, obviously with the band many times, but when we used to drive back and forth to the East Coast, we used to like to drive on 20 instead of one of the interstates. Because it's just as fast once you get into, you know, like, Eastern Wyoming and Nebraska and Northern Iowa, there ain't nothing there, you know.
Tell me about it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's where I'm from, and that's where Jake, who took the call, is from as well. We're from Iowa.
Okay. And here you are, making your mark in Seattle, boomtown.
Of all places.
Yeah, how did you guys end up here?
Well, let's see here. I was living in Iowa, and I started this online thing. I've been doing it since 1996, where I just write about technology stuff that I love. And I ended up doing an interview on a webcam with a cable network that no longer exists, and I did the interview. And the next day they called me up and asked me if I wanted to host a show.
Uh-huh.
So I ended up moving from Iowa, the cornfields of Iowa, to San Francisco.
Oh,
and you talk
Baghdad
about,
by the bay.
Hey, yeah. As a matter of fact, I lived at the corner in my the second year I lived there on the corner of 16th and Market, which is where Baghdad Cafe was.
Oh, I thought you were going to say at the corner of Gay and Straight.
Well, that's pretty much where it was. It was in the Castro. So
You
are exactly correct.
Right.
In both cases, we are correct.
Yeah.
And so I lived in San Francisco, and then I moved from there to L.A., and then from L.A. I came up to Seattle, and I just fell in love with it. I just love the area.
It's pretty nice here.
Yeah.
I feel lucky to be a multi-generational Seattleite.
Wow, so your whole family has been here for a while.
Yeah, three and four generations. I suppose the only better thing would have been if I were a multi-generational Parisian. But, you know, that wasn't in the cards, genetically speaking.
Yeah, you really can't control those things.
No, you can't choose your parents, which I've always cursed that. It's certainly inhibited my otherwise what would have been a fantastic athletic career. If I could have just chosen my parents.
You know, that's the reason I went into technology, and probably English as well, because I just could not make it on the field.
Well, I've always been kind of able to cut it, but through no genetic gifts whatsoever, surely through dogged perseverance.
So are you the only president who's living still in the Seattle area?
No, we all live here. We're all from here. Actually, the joke that Chris and I used to have, Chris lived for a long time in northeast Seattle, and that's where I grew up, and he grew up in Bellevue, and now that's where I live, so we just kind of swapped neighborhoods.
Wow.
And Jason always has, does now, and probably always will live on Capitol Hill.
Hmm.
So
We go to Capitol Hill all the time.
Then you probably see Jason.
Oh, that'd be so strange.
You go out after dark in Seattle to places where alcohol is served, you're likely to see Jason.
They don't serve alcohol at Dick's.
No, but they serve a lot of people to whom alcohol has been served.
Oh, tell me about it.
Oh, yeah, they do.
You get some of the most interesting conversations at 1 in the morning at Dick's.
There was a great little blurb in the Weekly or the Stranger somewhere recently about someone who was in line there, late at night, and just after... That's my wife making salad dressing in the blender. Pardon me.
It's no worries. Hey, we work out of our home. We totally understand.
Anyway, you know the experience, particularly at the... It's also true at the other Dick's, but mostly at that Capitol Hill one, where it takes somebody like 5 minutes to figure out what they're going to order, even though they've been in line for 10 minutes already.
And
they only know, like, two things
time.
On the menu, right? And they're like, let's see. How much is the cheese again? And this guy wrote a piece about how he just finally lost it one night, and just these three kids were in front of him, and he just said, could you just make up your fucking mind and order? And they were so flabbergasted that they just ordered and left.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Only in Seattle.
I went to the Broadway Dick's for the first time in many years just a couple days ago.
Mm.
I had a meeting up there this week, and I was 15 minutes early, and I was hungry. It was at nighttime, and I just thought, Dicks.
Yeah,
it's always a good time for Dicks.
So I have a question. We're trying to buy a house around here. Tell us your take on each of the little neighborhoods, because this is your stomping ground. You know all these little neighborhoods around here.
Neighborhoods? Trying to buy a house?
We are.
What the hell kind of show is this?
We really don't know, to tell you the
truth. We have kind of a wide-ranging...
Well, generally speaking, we talk about technology, and we will get to that with a podcast hotel and whatnot. But when we pull, this is my fiance, Ponzi.
Hi.
Ponzi's your name?
Yes.
Well,
how do you spell that?
Ponzi.
So, as in Ponzi scheme.
Exactly.
Chris, you should be afraid.
Well, she is the number. What are you, number four Ponzi on Google?
Yeah, I'm behind Mr. Charles Ponzi. Yes.
So yeah, she's pretty high up there.
And Ponzi, that's amazing.
Well, her real name is Latina Pon Andrada Sopon.
Well, wow.
That's
so
why Ponzi became the nickname, yeah.
This is what we're saying.
Neighborhoods, well, you know, I have lived here my whole life. Where have I lived? I grew up in Laurelhurst. I live in Medina now, so I've had the posh thing pretty well covered. I've also lived in Ravenna and Capitol Hill up by the Harvard exit. And down in the East Lake neighborhood.
So a quick description of those.
I think that might be it. Pardon?
Like a quick description of those. That's what I... Like everyone has their different description of each neighborhood, and we're trying to figure out where we fit in.
Well, you know what the real irony is we live in Bellevue, and we get a lot of grief from our friends who think they're cool for living in Bellevue because they think it's all whitey up tidy. But actually, Bellevue is much more... culturally, racially, socioeconomically diverse than most of Seattle's neighborhoods now. I actually find Bellevue to be a really interesting place where if you go out to dinner, you hear, you know, I'll hear three different Slavic languages and three Southeast Asian languages and a lot of Spanish, and it's a pretty interesting place. Now, in Seattle, it's pretty much you could just take your, like, Leschi, Capitol Hill, Magnolia, Queen Anne, Finney Ridge, pretty much just a bunch of fucking PC, uptidy whiteys just like me, right? Bunch of people, you know, young professionals who are, you know, progressive types. And it's always surprising how homogenous it is to go to a neighborhood like that. You know, if I go out to Finney Ridge where my sister lives, and if I go out to the 74th Street Ale House, everybody there, they're all like me. So that's what Seattle neighborhoods are like. Everybody's just like me, you know, overeducated, politically correct.
You
more
don't...
annoying than me? Darcy says they're more annoying than I am, which is almost impossible.
Wow.
So that's my thumbnail. I mean, Seattle's, I don't know if Seattle even really has neighborhoods anymore. It's a lot more homogenous than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago.
The funny thing is now when I listen to your music, I'll catch things that I wouldn't have caught before.
Annoying things?
No, not annoying things, but like what was the lyric? It mentioned QFC.
Oh, sure. Well, I think that's one of our best songs, the Stranger song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great song.
You know, and when I hear that now, it's like, oh, you know, there's a QFC right down the street. I wouldn't have made that connection until I had come to Seattle.
Quality Food Centers, owned by Kroger brand.
I'm now enjoying your music on a different level than I used to.
There are some, you know, we used to have a song about a little bird at the Dick's parking lot that we used to play live. And actually the song on our second record, Little Indian Princess, is about a girl who was a cashier at the Broadway Dick's, and that Chris had a crush on.
That's a cute story.
Which is why there's a line in the middle of the song about Dick's. But
interesting. Okay, so you have to tell me, first of all, how'd you find out about the Podcast Hotel? And second of all, you know, what is your involvement with it?
Well, I got engaged in it because I was on a panel, an MIT Enterprise panel, which are these things that happen in various big cities around the country every few months, and there are some in the Seattle area every year where a bunch of MIT grads put on a panel usually having to do with something related to sort of tech entrepreneurship. And they did one last spring about digital music, and 400 or 500 people came, and I was on a panel, and along with me on the panel, among other people, was Bill Valenti, who is the CEO of Melodio.
Oh, yeah, I know Bill.
Podcasting firm. And he and I just kind of hit it off. We just started talking afterwards, and we were on the same wavelength. And so I've gotten involved with Melodio a little bit. I'm on their advisory board and have had my eyes open to the possibilities of podcasting. And also, you know, the presidents have their own record label, and I've always been the business head and the president, so all avenues of new media distribution, whether it's monetized or purely promotional, I'm interested in learning about and exploring and finding out how we can use it strictly for our own business. So it's just something that, and it's directly pertinent to how and why and whether the presidents make money or not into the future. So
what do you think about the whole podcasting thing?
I think it's interesting. I love what's out there. The question is, you know, I mean, the big question is monetization and how the model works out long term. And the success of podcasts has made me think more and more that monetization is ultimately going to be advertising revenue driven, and also the success of Google, you know, in the last 18 months to 3 years. It just seems to be the way the model is going. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure how the artists are going to get paid. Somebody's going to get paid.
Well, we're getting paid.
Yeah, I mean, MySpace is somewhere, you know, it's not about podcasting, but obviously when you go to someone's space, if they're a band or a musical artist, they start streaming the stuff that's there right away. Mm-hmm. And so these kinds of uses where you go to like a MySpace page and you hear the music immediately, or you can podcast stuff, a program like yours, or even some music that people are giving away promotionally, it just completely changes the landscape, and it changes the pace of how things... See, the traditional music business model, what the aggregators of content, record labels, do is market and promote the material, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which takes a certain time frame to do. You have to have the record delivered. you have to then set up a marketing campaign, and it takes months. And for a huge record, a Madonna record, they start planning the marketing campaign a year in advance, right? Just like you would for a major product rollout at Starbucks or somewhere else. But the cool thing that podcasting or other of these very immediate delivery systems do is they just completely short-circuit that. And I don't know how the artist will be paid, but, you know, when... I mean, if you think about pop music, the traditional model has been for a long time, people bought singles up through the late 60s. And it was almost a disposable thing, right? You heard the single on the radio, or you bought it and you maybe listened to it 20 times, and then you sort of got rid of it. Or didn't listen to it for 10 years until you dug it out. And now it's, you know, you can go find the single or find the interview or find whatever you want to find as a podcast or in some other format. But the cycle is even faster. You can find a jillion things in an hour, and then you don't even have to buy them, you know? I mean, you can just, if it's a podcast, you can download it and you listen to it. You put it on your phone or on your laptop or on your desktop, and you listen to it every day if you really like it for a week, and then you just throw it in the garbage and get rid of it. And it changes the paradigm so radically that obviously nobody's fully wrapped their head around how to deal with it. It's really exciting as someone who owns content and who has produced content. I mean, I don't know if it will be easier or harder for the president, for example, to be paid for the use of our copyrighted material, but it's so exciting to see the old model kind of derailed, because the old model was not so hot either.
So are you guys...
That was a pretty long answer.
No, and it was a perfect answer. Are you guys planning on doing anything in the space in the future?
I'd like to. I mean, I haven't been, for the last 10 months or 12 months, I haven't been touring with the band. A mutual friend of all of ours in the band has taken my place playing guitar. But I'd like to see us, you know, starting by streaming or making available pretty much every show that we can.
Oh, wow.
Or our own stuff, or, I mean, you know, it's so wide open.
You know,
and podcasting only further facilitates that by making it even more open and easier to format this stuff and to have a platform that a lot of people can use and spread it around on.
It's not exactly the same, but They Might Be Giants, another one of my favorite bands,
mm-hmm.
They record every one of their concerts. They make it available. It's not,
mm-hmm.
you know, they charge for it, but they allow it, they have it in FLAC and I think in MP3 format
uh-huh.
on their website.
Pearl Jam's doing that too.
Oh, Pearl Jam is. Wow, I didn't know.
That's cool.
No, that's very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's exactly podcasting because there's no synchronization process beyond the purchase.
Right.
But
and I don't think that the end user cares. I don't think the end user really cares whether it's on-demand streaming, whether you call it podcasting, whether you call it a free download. All they care is that they go somewhere on their phone or their laptop or their desktop and they click on some icon and they get to hear the music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, that's the bottom line.
Would you consider yourself the geek of the band or just someone who's a geek? Yeah, a
techie. I'm totally not a tech geek at all. I'm purely... I mean, all this stuff, it's interesting. Getting involved with Melodio is really interesting because I very intimately understand the minutiae and the nuts and bolts of the music business side of it,
mm-hmm.
and licensing of copyrighted material, whether it's the publishing side or the master recording use side. And then I really get the big picture part of it, of what this means for content delivery. All that stuff that happens in the middle, which is, you know, all the platform kind of stuff, I am so ignorant. I feel kind of like a fish out of water or slightly embarrassed sometimes, but I just don't. As you know, if you've been into it for, you know, 15 years and you said doing your webcast
thing
stuff since 1996 for 10 years, you know, you've stayed abreast of every change and you know what an overwhelming thing it is to keep up with.
Certainly.
And unless you're deeply passionate about it, like I'm sure you are, it's hard to... I'm just not that excited about it, so I don't learn about it.
So,
But I'm getting more interested now just because it's where we are. to where things are going.
You need to be there. Yeah.
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 I do.
More than anything. So what about the rest of the band? I mean, do they feel the kind of the same way? Or
Chris Ballew, singer, is sort of, you read the contract and tell me what we should do kind of a guy. He's a true artist. He's a very, very bright guy, but one of the reasons he's so good at writing songs and performing and doing what he does is that he's very, in a way, savvy about not using as little brain space as possible for things other than his creative pursuits. So he tends to, you know, compartmentalize and try to keep stuff out of that. Tries to make as much space as he can for creative work. So he's not really tapped in. Jason, out of the three of us, Finn, our drummer, is by far the most forward user. I mean, he's sort of the guy who always has a new phone every 3 months or 6 months cares about other things about his computer than, you know. Although I have to say, Chris has been recording. Chris hated computers 5 years ago, and now, you know, he makes records on his computer every day and has for the last 5 years.
Wow.
And Jason's a very forward user and always is interested in the newest geeky stuff, whether it's, you know, in the, you know, the lines are so blurry now, but, you know, whether it was TiVo or a new groovy TV or new computer stuff, he's always been into gadgets.
What kind of feedback do you guys get from fans? And I know you have a website and you've got journals set up. Is that something that the fans are seeking you online for?
It's interesting, yeah. PresidentsRock.com is our website. And, you know, we have, like everybody, a discussion board. And it's amazing how avidly it's used by, you know, a small, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, 400 to 800 or 500 to 1,000 people who seem to use it regularly, and 100 of those are really rabid users. It's an interesting thing to see this community that exists around what we do and what we've done. It's a truly 21st century kind of experience to participate in that. I love it because, you know, I can log on. I go look at the discussion board every 2 weeks or once a month, and if there's something on there about me or a question, I just, you know, chime in. I just think it's really fantastic.
And the fans freak out at that point?
Somewhat. You know, it really is a democratizing force. I mean, they may, but to me, it takes away the barrier, you know, between the artist and the person, which I think is purely fictional. Anyway, you know, maybe that same perception or that barrier won't be there in the future, because in the pre-interactive media world, media was only a one-way thing, right? If, you know, I'm 41, so if I were idolizing Ted Nugent or, you know, Joe Perry from Aerosmith in the 70s, all I could get was what I got from the TV or from record covers or from Cream magazine. There was no way to have any feedback loop. And that's what breeds that kind of unreal, fanatic, idol worship nonsense. So I'm kind of hopeful that the ability to get the feedback loop going and have interaction will diffuse that whole part of our culture that, although it doesn't seem to be happening, it only seems to be getting worse if you look at American Idol and, you know, The Apprentice and all this crap.
So you're not much into television?
We don't have a TV.
Really?
We have two daughters, and we just don't see any reason why there should be a TV in the house until they get older. They're 3 and 5, and there's just no need for them to see anything that's on TV.
Now, what about the internet? I mean,
For our girls?
Yeah, for your daughters.
They don't really, you know, they don't go online. Our older daughter is probably old enough to get what's going on, but, you know, they don't, we're not into it. You know, I mean, the person who invented a computer didn't have a computer, right? I mean, who wrote the piece this past year, the computerless computer company? Was that Andy Rappaport? It was the Harvard Business Review article of the year this year, last year.
Oh, wow. I'll have to look at it.
Yeah. Computer's just a tool. It's all about learning how to think.
In your average daily information consumption, do you use printed media like the radio, since you don't have a television, or the internet?
I use the internet.
Okay.
And I, you know, I work as a public affairs consultant, and I did that before the president started, and I'm blown away by how different the work is. Because it used to be people were just on the phone all day in that business, you know. And I work with a bunch of other people in a fairly open room. And, you know, in that environment before, you'd just everybody be on the phone, literally 8 or 9 hours a day. And now you hardly hear anybody on the phone. It's just all day long. And for doing that kind of work, the research capabilities are amazing. So my news, I don't know, you know, I listen to the radio, NPR, and then I have my main browser is defaulted to the Drudge Report, so that's where I check in 3 or 4 times a day to see what's happening.
So do you use Internet Explorer or Firefox, Safari?
I use a bunch of different browsers at once because I'm usually trying to do multiple things at once. So if I'm at work, I use Entourage. What we use, the firm where I'm a public affairs consultant, and then I usually have my AOL account open too, and then I use Safari and Internet Explorer as my two, because I'm in a Mac environment.
Yeah.
Use those two as my main browsers, and then I also have, I like Mozilla, seems to work with some websites that sometimes are a struggle with the other two browsers. Mozilla sometimes really works.
Yeah.
That's my main thing that I have going all day long. It's just a dance among all those different browsers and email servers.
Well, you must have fun at it, though.
Oh, absolutely. Work is supposed to be fun. I've never done a job I didn't think was fun.
Now, speaking of jobs or work, are you guys doing anything in the near future, working on any projects?
You know,
not to sound like an English major again. But...
any book reports coming up? Yeah, Jason, I think, is... he's reading Joyce's Ulysses, and he's going to do a kind of a nice, concise two-pager on that. And,
single-spaced, please.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure. You know, my bandmates are really touring. They're gung-ho to tour, which is one reason I stopped. When we reformed 3 years ago, for the first couple of years, we only went out and played. We'd only leave town for a few days at a time because I have kids and Chris has kids, and we decided we didn't want to be gone for more than a few days, and then about a year and a half ago, both of my bandmates decided they really wanted to go out and go, you know, be on tour for real for 3 or 4 weeks at a time, and I just said, no way, not going to do it. So we figured out a solution, and they're doing that, and I think actually the next record they make, they will probably make with Andrew McKeag, who's the guitar player who is filling my shoes adequately, I hope.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't think you're completely replaceable.
No, I'm not completely replaceable, but it's a new, you know, it's just a different thing. We call it, amongst ourselves, PUSA 2, Presidents 2.
Well, you haven't
like
been...
Like Earth 2.
Yeah, you haven't been impeached, so...
No. I'm still, you know, as I said in something I wrote for our website, I can't really quit the band because it's like a marriage, you know, it's like it's not something you can just opt out of. Plus, as I said, I've always been the business head, and I still spend, you know, 5 minutes to 3 hours every day dealing with ongoing president's business stuff. As my bandmate Chris once said, Dave, if it weren't for you, I'd be flipping burgers at McDonald's.
Oh, boy.
Which I don't think is entirely true, but there's an element of truth to that. I've been the one with the sort of, I have a certain level of very focused ambition and drive and nose for the bottom line, nose for the margins.
Business
that,
savvy.
My bandmates don't necessarily share to the same degree.
Now, would you play then if they came a little closer? So if they were back in Seattle, would you?
You know, that we have had some shows in the last year, and I haven't played because it's just sort of not fair to Andrew, the guy who's been filling in, because he comes back here and, you know, he wants to play and have his friends and his wife and kids come see him play. And also, Chris and Jason, we're musicians, so we're lazy by nature, and they don't want to have to rehearse with me when they're already rehearsed with Andrew. So it's been fine. You know, I really don't... I can't say I miss it. I can't say I miss playing loud music for people. It was a blessed part of my life getting to do that, but...
So you're a vice president, then? Is that...
I don't know what I am. I'm integral to the ongoing functioning of the business, and yet they're going to go on tour in Australia for 2 weeks without me in a week. So
wow.
that's actually, you know, the one place when they've gone to Australia a couple times in the last year, and that's when I go, oh, God, that wouldn't be so bad.
Oh, boy. Especially when it starts raining up here.
Have you been to Australia?
Not yet.
It's a wonderful place. If you get any opportunity, go to Australia and New Zealand.
We've heard that several times.
Well, I thought about, we're not married yet. We're going to be getting married in November up here.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We don't know how well November is going to treat us, I mean, in terms of weather. But
it'll be indoor. No worries.
I'm sure it'll be indoor. So we're not sure exactly where we're going to do a honeymoon, but
honeymoon in New Zealand.
That's what I, you know, that's what
Australia
I heard.
Is pretty damn hot in the middle of their summer. I don't know, depending on where you are. But certainly anywhere, well, pretty much anywhere in the country is just burning up in, you know, December.
Well, I know that catching some scenes from the Lord of the Rings trilogy of New Zealand was
It's unbelievable.
Nice. Yeah.
It's like if you crossed Washington State, you know, the Pacific Northwest Coast, Washington, Oregon, cross those with Hawaii, that's what it's like. Hmm. It's
wow.
Indescribable. The flora and are just incredible. I mean, the food is unbelievable. I don't know. The wine's great. It's just an amazing place. People are nice.
Well, we know you've probably had a busy day, and you just put your kids down, and you won't want to take up too much
time. I'm going to do a whole bunch more work.
Yeah.
Are you?
We'll let you have at it.
I'm a workaholic. I can't help it.
But we certainly appreciate the time that you've spent, Dave.
That's no problem.
And I'll send you your homework assignment through email.
Okay, and we'll see you, not this weekend, but next at the Podcast Hotel event, right?
Yes, we will.
I'm going to be on a panel moderated by John Richards, I guess.
Okay. I know I'm moderating another panel, and then Jake
I'm
is
on some panel.
Doing some other panel.
Some panel, music something.
Yeah.
Something with music and computers.
Podcasting. I'm not sure.
So, Chris, are you a well-known fellow in this sort of blogosphere around podcasting? Because I'm pretty ignorant about it. I have no idea what you do.
Yes, he is.
We'll answer for him.
I can't answer that question.
Because that's another thing I love about podcasting and the blogosphere in general, but especially around podcasting. So I just love that, you know, like Alex Williams, who's putting on the Podcast Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
You just, you know, have the idea and you do it, which is so great. That's the best of the so-called World Wide Web, you know. I mean, it's a manifestation. Podcasting and these kind of events and this kind of culture is a manifestation of the best of the net and the most that it promised. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well,
and it's great that I see the evidence of, you know, the influence and presence of the blogosphere as evidence that, you know, the web will never fully be able to be commercialized or controlled. I just don't think it's going to happen, and that's so exciting to me, because 2 or 3 years ago it looked like maybe, you know, if AOL becomes Time Warner, etc., is the hammer just going to come down and there's going to be no portal anymore? But that's obviously not the case.
Well, yeah, even continues to evolve, even despite China's best efforts.
Right, yes. and collaboration from Google, Microsoft, and others.
That's for sure. Well, I could probably do it now, but we actually hold a conference, too, up here in Seattle every year. We're going into our sixth year. We did our first one in Seattle last year. It's called GnomeDex.
Uh-huh.
And it's much in the same vein. Alex would probably be able to explain it to you better than I could. But if you'd be free at that point,
I'd be very interested. I'm actually kind of trying to, you know, I said that my interest in this has grown out of trying to figure out how the president's copyrighted material can be, that its value can be maximized in the future. But I'm also kind of starting to want to move into this area for the rest of my professional life.
Well,
for other stuff to work on. So I'm in.
Great. That
sounds good.
And I can tell you, we basically throw 300 of the world's most prolific bloggers into the same room.
Well,
so
that'll be interesting to check out.
Yeah, like I said, talk to Alex. I can't sell it very well because I'm kind of integral to it, but I certainly would just love it from your perspective of being on the kind of the other side of the fence and straddling that line. I think your perspective is certainly original. And
I'm still very interested in the, you know, I was working for a while with this company called WeedShare that's in Seattle. Mm-hmm. You know them?
No.
John Beezer.
It's a cool concept.
It's a cool concept. They haven't quite made it work, but it showed a lot of promise for, you know, nobody's quite figured out the P2P blog music sharing ultimate viral solution yet. And WeedShare was a possible solution where, you know, by sharing, where anybody could become a store. Because when you would buy a file for a dollar and then you could sell it 100 times, and every time you sold it, or every time you shared it, if somebody bought it, you would get a cut of that.
Ah, interesting.
It's an amazing model, and the you know, the DRM that they set up and the platform works well. They've just had other issues they haven't resolved, and I'm still fascinated by that idea of any blog basically becoming an outlet for any product and the facilitation of that next step, which is sort of capitalism at its most open. I'd love the idea of being able to set up a store instantly.
Oh, you and Chris are going to talk for a long time after the podcast. Oh, God. Hotel, I can tell.
Anyway,
right,
go
now.
check out weedshare.com.
Yeah, I will. I think I've actually heard of it. I don't know if I looked at it as deeply as Jake had, but
it's a very, very interesting. I think it's the coolest model, and I really tried to get behind it. And it's an amazing model. It's the most exciting model that I've seen. I don't know if it's the most workable, but it's. You know, it incentivizes sharing.
Yeah. Well, it almost sounds like Amazon.com, kind of like, what they've done with their affiliates or associates program.
Well, it's kind of like, this is like a horrible like comparison, but it's kind of like Amway for music.
In a way it is. In a way it is.
But you're encouraged to like promote stuff to your friends that's actually good, as opposed to saying,
right,
buy my cleaning products and sign up for the program.
Right.
You have to get past the Amway.
So will I get to meet you guys, get to meet you all at the podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. Certainly.
Good. I look forward to it. Please just come up and say hi if you see me. I don't have any idea what you look like, and I'll probably just look like some normal preppy dork.
Will we.
Yeah, we'll have our ties on and everything. Yeah.
I'll be the guy, and I'm pretty much like jeans and the press shirt and the saddle shoes. That's me, probably.
I'm more of a I used to be a flannel guy, then Ponzi converted me to hoodies.
Hoodies are good.
Around here, it works better.
One of the challenges of hoodies is that the hoodie has to be exactly right, or it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I'm kind of, you know, press shirt, press dress, press Brooks Brothers shirt, Levi's 501s, and saddle shoes or Dirty Bucks, you know, like suede shoes. That's my thing. I'm kind of old school.
That's a very Seattle look.
Yeah, I can see that.
It is.
So we'll see you weekend after this one.
Sounds good.
And then I'll come to the Gnome show.
Oh, for sure.
And I'll should do dinner just like regular people one night. That would be cool because I'm not going to be at the pod show.
Okay.
I mean, at the pod.
As regular people.
Yeah.
I'm a regular person.
Dave can do regular people.
Not
all techie. Everything doesn't have
right.
to be techie.
Totally
That's
regular person.
Ponzi pulls me off of tech also too often. So that's what I rely on her for.
That's
so
good.
It's a good thing.
You want to have a spouse that balances you.
Yeah, she's the yin to my yang, of course.
That's good.
Or is it the yang to the yin?
You know, if you're exactly the same, it would be boring. My wife and I are very different, and that's what one of the things that makes it work.
Variety is the spice of life.
Absolutely.
And if you want good baba ganoush, the Mediterranean kitchen, either in Bellevue or in Seattle, is
fine. The Seattle one's better.
Try that out. That's good.
Oh, great.
Final note.
Great baba ganoush. Thanks again, Dave.
I'll see you guys soon.
Appreciate the time. Right.
Good
Thank
night.
You.
Bye.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.